Welcome to the NASCAR on NBC podcast. I'm your host, Nate Ryan. This is our fifth episode, and for the second straight week, we are joined by an NBC sports analyst who also is moonlighting as a NASCAR driver these days. It's Brian Vickers. Brian has been doing work since last year on NASCAR America for NBC Sports, and that began after he had a recurrence of blood clots that had forced him from when he was driving the number 55 car for then Michael Waltrip Racing last season. Brian's health problems, I think, are fairly well documented, so I won't dwell on that. But needless to say, it's kept him out of the car quite a bit during what's been was really a promising career from the outset. He won the Xfinity Championship in 2003. He's a multi-time Cup winner. He made the playoffs in 2009. But since 2010, he's had more than a few instances in which he's unfortunately been forced out of the car by health issues. And so he's had to find, as he put it, a way to make peace with the concept of his NASCAR career perhaps coming to an end. But fortunately for Brian, it didn't as of a few weeks ago, because when Tony Stewart got hurt, Stewart Haas Racing turned to Brian Vickers to drive the number 14 Chevrolet in the Daytona 500. He had a good speed week. So he actually was in the top five of the Great American Race with less than 25 laps to go. Very impressive. And he'll return to the car this weekend at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. So we talked a little bit to Brian about what it's like to parachute back into NASCAR. We talked a lot about what he's been doing since he left, including his myriad business interests that have taken him all over the globe. And then we also talked a little bit about what's next for Brian Vickers. We know at this point, Las Vegas is the only race he's confirmed of doing in the number 14 car at this point. There could be more races, however, and perhaps there could be opportunities with other teams. So we get into that a little bit as well. So without further ado, here is NBC Sports analyst and NASCAR driver, Brian Vickers. All right, Brian, really appreciate you joining us. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, buddy.
Well, you were out of the car for almost a year before Daytona, and I know that you got a lot of questions, I'm sure, about what's it like getting back in the car. And I know I hear this from drivers all the time. It's just like riding a bike. I know that, like, getting back in the car and doing the actual driving thing probably wasn't all that different. So what I'd like for you to tell me is, what was different? Was anything different? Did anything about the whole NASCAR experience seem different that you'd forgotten about from March of 2015?
You know, I mean, very little really changed. It is true. It's funny. You know, when you're kind of in the forest, right? Seems like things are changing rapidly, but when you kind of step back and dive back into it, you know, it's not that different. I mean, you know, similar faces, you know, the same faces, you know, maybe they're wearing different shirts and they got a different number on the shirt and a different sponsor, but by and large, it is a community that is fairly stable, you know, which is good and bad, right? I mean, you know, there's very low turnover. I think within the industry, you see a lot of turnover with it between teams, you know, but you don't see a lot of turnover in the industry. So a lot of familiar faces, and I like that. It's comfortable, you know, and it is nice to see everyone again. I think that's the biggest thing you miss when you step out of the sport is people. You know, the cars, you know, they're still race cars, you know, are they a little different? Is the bodywork a little different? Is maybe a few rules changed? And, you know, maybe, you know, a year later, NASCAR has caught on to a couple of things the teams are doing. The teams have started doing some new things. But by and large, the race cars, the tires, steering wheel, brakes, you know, everything's pretty similar. And, yeah, I think some of the changes I probably noticed the most, you know, Daytona, I think their safety advancements, they had, you know, soft walls on every single wall, best I could tell, which was huge. You know, I think some of the stuff that they're working on inside, you know, kind of, you know, the driver safety meeting in Daytona, you know, working on some great stuff and had some great ideas. But, you know, I think that's the kind of slow, steady progress we see every year. The biggest thing, honestly, if I had to say one thing, is I think it was around the social kind of marketing aspect of the sport. I feel like, you know, kind of stepping out of it and stepping back in it within that year time frame, you know, NASCAR has been working really hard with the teams, the drivers, and their partners to really get the fan, you know, driver, you know, partner relationship in the social realm right. And I feel like they've made a lot of progress in that area in the last year. You know, the fan engagement from a NASCAR all the way to a driver level seemed like it had probably progressed as much or more than anything else in the sport, from my opinion.
Right, right. So that's stuff like, were you asked by Stuart Haas to do more with Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, like that kind of stuff?
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. Like the fan engagement, the Pound NASCAR Day or Daytona 500 thing they had going on, and just the social impressions and the social media and the fan engagement. You can just really see that, you know, starting to kick off. I mean, like, it's been going on for a while, but it seemed like of everything that's changed, that was probably the biggest mover.
Right, right. It's all a whirlwind when I think back to that first week of February, Brian. I'm sure it was much more so for you, but as I think back on that first week and I'm thinking about, like, all of the tumblers that sort of had to fall into place to make this happen, I'm thinking about, like, some really simple logistical questions for you. Like, whose motorhome did you use while you were down there? Did you have your own? Do you use Tony's? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, you know, it is. There was a lot more to it. You know, I mean, I wasn't planning on being in Daytona. You know, I've been, you know, and I guess that kind of touches on a bigger question, you know, I'm sure we'll get into, which is kind of where have I been?
Yeah.
And what have I been doing? But,
yeah, we'll get to that for sure.
you know, I wasn't planning on being in Daytona, and, you know, I very much had, you know, by no means given up on racing at all. I mean, I love it. I always thought that I would get back to it in some capacity, but the notion of racing the Daytona 500 or being in a full-time kind of winning car, you know, had by and large kind of passed, and at least for 2016, you know, there just wasn't. I explored once I got approval to race from my doctors. You know, there just wasn't a winning kind of, you know, walk in the gate and we can win today opportunity on the table. And for me, that was a deal break. And so I wasn't planning on being in Daytona. I wasn't even anywhere near Daytona. And I get this text. I get a text from Rodney and then from Zippy, you know, can you race? You know, let's just, you know, short and sweet, right? I mean, that's typical Rodney fashion, which I appreciate.
Right.
And I replied yes. And I replied yes. And then that was kind of it for a minute. And for a bit. And then you know, and then I get the question from Zippy, and the answer is kind of the same. And you know, I said, let me know. And then, you know, a day passes, maybe 12 hours a day, 24 hours, something like that. And said, you know, can you talk? And I said, yes. And, you know, and the question was obvious, right? You know, look, we're obviously trying to figure out how we're going to fill the seat now that Tony's going to be out for at least Daytona, maybe a few more races. At that point, I think a lot of things were up in the air and a lot of question marks were still left for them to figure out. And, you know, and I said, look, I can race, you know, and I can race safely and I can be safe in the car and out of the car. I'm good to go. And I, you know, and the funny thing is that, you know, and I guess it's, you know, you know, I'm flattered to an extent, but they didn't even ask, you know, the question, do you think you can be competitive even being out for a year? I think, you know, I've done that so many times that they, I guess they just assumed the answer was yes. You know, but later in the conversation, you know, I was like, look, I feel, you know, talking to Mike and the guys, I was like, look, I feel very comfortable. Can I promise a win? Of course not. Daytona, anything can happen. But I feel very comfortable getting back in the car after being gone for 10 months. You know, I've done that a couple of times, and it very much is like riding a bike. And, you know, and honestly, I was like, you know, I was standing with Rodney and Mike one day in the shop, you know, kind of fast forwarding a minute here, but, and Rodney was like, I'm not sure he doesn't run as good or better when he's been out for a while. He's like, you know, he'd been out for 10 months when I took him to Bristol, and we led like almost 200 laps. So it was all good, and it happened quick. And, you know, and I was actually in Colorado. I'd been working pretty much every day since January 1st, with the exception of 2 days. that I went skiing with some friends, and I get these kind of texts come in, and you know, I'm skiing. I run into Jimmy Johnson out there, who's out there quite a bit as well, and him and I were skiing one day together, and I'm getting these messages, and I'm just kind of like, you know, what happens, you know, whatever life has in store. You know, I was like, look, it'd be really cool to drive the 14. And so it's a great opportunity. I'd be happy to do it. It would be a pleasure and an honor to fill in for Tony. And I said, let me know, you know, I can be there, you know, give me 24 hours notice. I can be in the shop to fit a seat. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that was the end of the conversation. I went back to skiing. I mean, there was really nothing else to do. It's like, you know, until you get the call, you know, once they gave me kind of the green light, you know, I started down the process of getting, honestly, what the hardest part was just getting my NASCAR license, which I hadn't even yet applied for. And not because I necessarily thought I would or wouldn't use it, but it just wasn't top of my mind. It just wasn't a priority at the time. And, until an opportunity arose. And so I had to, you know, do the fit, you know, the medical exam and the impact test and the drug test and all those things, which, you know, I wasn't concerned one bit about, you know, passing them. You know, like I told Zippy, I was like, look, I can stand on one foot and touch my nose. I'm pretty sure I'm not blind, right, and I don't do drugs. So I think we're good. He's like, well, just let me know when you get the thumbs up. And I was like, okay, no problem. So that took like a few days. You know, that took a minute to kind of get all that back. But once all that was done, the paperwork was done, I got my license, we were all good to go. That was probably the biggest challenge. You know, I still had my bus. I still had my motorhome. And, I hadn't sold it. And and Randy, who's been with me for 8 years, you know, he was retired from the military and the police anyway, so he wanted to take some time off. So, you know, it all kind of worked, and he wasn't doing anything else. And, you know, he was ready to go with the opportunity. So, you know, off to Daytona we were.
Great. Yeah, I mean, see, logistically, I'm thinking, like, I know drivers are creatures of habit, and you like having things a certain way. And I'm thinking, like, yeah, like, how do you just send your motorhome on the road, or how do you do that if you're doing it last minute? Because usually you guys have entire seasons planned out, you know, months ahead, with people making sure that all the itineraries and schedules are filled. So I think it's impressive that you were able to sort of pull all that together last minute, and it seems like show up relatively relaxed and ready to get in the car.
So, yeah, you know, to answer your question, we are creatures of habit.
Yeah.
I think, you know, when you perform at that level, you really want to make sure you know, you don't have to think about anything else. Everything has to be done. I'm very lucky, it's good and bad. I'm OCD, I'm very organized, and I've always been that way. So sometimes it's, you know, as I always like to say, the sword cuts both ways. You know, typically your strengths are your weaknesses. And for the most part, I think being extremely organized is a good thing, but sometimes, you know, it's also a lot of work. But for the most part, it wasn't too bad. I mean, I was fairly prepared, you know, to pick up and go. You know, really quickly. And so that helped tremendously.
We had Parker Kligerman on the podcast last week, Brian, and he brought you up and talked about how he had noticed you saying that you were at peace with, if you had raced your last time in NASCAR, you were at peace with it. And Parker talked a lot about how he took a lot of wisdom from that. And I heard you saying that a little bit in your earlier answers about you're not going to go to Daytona if you don't have a car that you can feel you can be competitive and win with. So what was that like? Is there a moment that you arrive at? How do you work through that process of getting that point of being at peace with your career if you don't race again?
Well, you know, I think it starts with almost dying two or three times.
That is a good place.
That's always a good way to get it to accomplish that. You know, it's funny. I say that in jest, but there's a lot of truth in it, in the sense of, you know, there's a difference between, you know, it's kind of, it's like a process of you know, non-attachment, you know, where you can love something but not necessarily be attached to it. You know, I love racing, but finding kind of a place where, you know, What I know for sure is that I love racing. I also know for sure that I'm not going to be able to race forever, right?
Right.
So the only difference between, you know, is learning to be at peace with or without something, because nothing lasts forever. And that means that, yes, I like to race. Yes, I want to race. But I'm also at peace with the fact that one day I'm not going to race. And the only question is it today or tomorrow? You know, and I think that once, you know, we're talking about it in the sense of racing, but for me, that was kind of a really big growth process through so much. You know, when I had my first blood clot and everything kind of got pulled out from under my feet, you know, it wasn't just racing. It was a lot of things. I mean, there's a lot of things that changed for me. And I think this realization that you're not invincible, you're not going to live forever, and you kind of always know that, but you don't really know it until it's like right in front of you.
Right.
And I think that's kind of where the growth and evolution, you know, you just kind of grow as a person, you kind of go through these experiences, and many, many times the best experiences you'll have in your life are the bad ones. I mean, I think that's where you grow the most. And I said one time in an interview, and I still feel this way, which is, you know, I think the saying is, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And I very much believe that. I think that's true. They do, I would also add, they leave out the part that everything in the middle sucks.
Very true. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, there was a lot of pain and a lot of bad things that came from my health situations, you know, having, you know, almost died from blood clots and then heart issues and open heart surgery and just kind of down the list. And we don't have to dive into all that. But you know, a lot of growth came from those experiences. A lot of pain came from them, but a lot of growth. And I think in that growth, that's something that I realized is just learning that nothing's going to be forever. And that includes racing. That doesn't mean you have to love it less because you know you may never do it again. You can love it just as much or more. And actually, quite honestly, I fell going back racing after open heart surgery. I only ran two races before I had another blood clot, but it was some of the most enjoyable races I've ever had, you know, because I very much was just focused on the enjoyment of just trying to win the race and probably drove, you know, some of my better races. Like, you know, I didn't win things, but considering kind of the car we had and what we thought we could do with it, like, it was, you know, it was a good race. And, you know, sometimes the driver, you may finish seventh and think it was a great race because you had a 15-point car. Sometimes you may finish second and be totally pissed off because you had a winning car. I'm sure you can ask Kevin from this past weekend, right? Like,
right.
You know, I mean, the whole race second, you're disappointed. If you run 20th all day and finish 10th, you're pretty excited. You know, so for me, you know, that's kind of what it was. I mean, that's kind of how I got there. It was a long, steady process of going through a lot and kind of growing as a person. And the funny thing is, I think it's hard to let go of that. It's hard because you always feel like as a competitor, as a driver, you know, you work so hard to make the impossible happen your whole life. You're afraid that if you let go of that, you know, that you're going to lose this competitive edge. And I actually found it to be quite the opposite. I think I gained a competitive edge.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, because I was more relaxed and happier. And I think that produces better results. You know, I just don't believe you have to be, you know, you have to be angry inside to win.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that. And I know that, you know, as far as your happiness, I know you certainly made the most of it when you were outside the car. You alluded to it a little bit earlier about all the places you went. I happened to run into Jeff Gordon right at the start of Speed Weeks, and he mentioned that last year he got texts from you, Australia, I think, Middle East. It was like, you know, where in the world is Brian Vickers, I think, is kind of the game that was being played whenever he heard from you. Tell me about that. Where did you go, and were there places that you had in mind, or was it just sort of spontaneous? How did you end up traveling the world last year?
Well, a couple of things. Couple of reasons. One, I've always enjoyed traveling. It's always been a passion of mine. I've always loved, you know, to travel and experience new places, new cultures, etc. You know, last year, for some time now, you know, I've been, you know, very active in the investing space and kind of with the guidance of, you know, some very dear mentors of mine, and one in particular is like a second father. And you know, who's a genius in the space, and it kind of started slowly over time, and then, you know, you know, when I was having health issues, I kind of, you know, I would very much dive into that and private equity and venture capital, and I very much enjoyed it, and it occupied my mind and time when I wasn't behind the wheel. And, you know, and then about 4 or 5 years ago, I started working with guys that are now my partners in New York. And every time I'd have a health issue, you know, they would jokingly, you know, one of them would jokingly call up and he would say, "Are you ready to go to real work?" And I'm like, you know, screw you. And, you know, but he would always remind me when I tell that story that he always started every conversation with, "Are you okay?" And then he would kind of jest me a little bit. But, you know, last March when, you know, I had that blood clot going to California, you know, I'm not really one to sit around. I just can't. I can't do it. I've tried it. It doesn't work for me. And so I called up Nick. Nick was his name. And Justin is the other guy. And I said, "All right, let's go. You know, what's first on the plate?" So I became a partner at the firm. And then we just kind of took off from there. We did, you know, Nick and Justin have been in the business for some time. We did 4 deals last year. And we did one the year before, but we did 4 last year. The first one we started working on, which is what took me to Costa Rica, was a medical device company that we bought down in Costa Rica. And we started a diligence on that, you know, April of last year, actually the end of March, March 25th, something like that, 26th, I think. We ended up closing the investment in, I think, September 1st. And, you know, that's going well. So we've been, you know, traveling a lot for that company. We're looking to IPO it later this year. We have a couple other investments. You know, one of them is in the maritime defense space. And we build, you know, a maritime defense barrier for ports, Navy bases, nuclear power plants, you know, et cetera, airports. And, you know, so that was kind of taking us to, you know, all over the world, particularly the Middle East. It's really more of a deterrent for terrorists than, say, a military. Like, it's not going to stop the U.S. Navy, but it'll stop a terrorist with a boat full of bombs, kind of a USS Cold type attack. So we were installing that in Israel last year and installing it, you know, in some U.S. Navy bases, and we're kind of going from there. We've got some more contracts in the Middle East that we're currently about to start fulfilling. And so... So nonetheless, it basically it's been mostly all work.
Wow.
and I've really enjoyed it. You know, so we've bought, sold, and or built, you know, just last year, in the past probably 10 months or 11 months, 4 companies, but, you know, a couple before that, and we're in the process of a few acquisitions now. And so that's pretty much been my year. I mean, January was, you know, the first week in L.A., for work and meetings, and then 2 days in Vegas for CES meetings, and then back to LA for 2 days of meetings, and then a red eye to New York for a 4-hour meeting, and then New York to Salt Lake for a meeting, for a dinner meeting, Salt Lake to San Francisco for 3 days, JP Morgan Healthcare Conference meetings, mostly with bankers on the IPO, and then to LA for 2 days of work, and then back to Miami for a day, and then from Miami to Paris for a day, and then Paris to Zurich for 2 days of meetings, Zurich to Liechtenstein for a day of meetings, and then Liechtenstein to Austria for 3 days, and then Austria to Munich for a dinner meeting, Munich back to Miami, and then Miami for a 4-day hedge fund conference, MIA was the name of it, and then from there to see where I think there to Aspen to go for a couple of days of skiing, and then called the race. I said yes, and then I was on my way to Daytona. Well, actually, I stopped in Charlotte to put a seat in the car first, and then to Daytona.
Gotcha. Well, I'm glad you got to squeeze in a little bit of relaxation and recreational time in the middle of all that on the slopes, because it sounds like all the traveling you do is virtually for work, for business.
Yeah, pretty much. Most all of it. I mean, we, you know, I always stop and find friends, you know, kind of around the world that I've made over the years, and you know, grab a dinner here and there, coffee or lunch, and catch up. But mostly, yeah, mostly off of work.
Crazy. I mean, I suppose, like, if this NASCAR thing doesn't work out, you've got a lot to fall back on. Not that you didn't even before everything that's happened in your life in the last several years. I know that you've always been kind of a long-term planner, thinker, but it seems like, I mean, not to say NASCAR is like a sidelight for you, or racing's a sidelight at this point, but it sounds like you've got a pretty significant day job to worry about these days.
Yeah, I before all this happened, for me, if I do anything, I'm going to do it 100%. And, you know, I enjoy, as you said, the day job. I found it fascinating. I'm learning a ton. I've got two great partners at Crown Predator, and we're doing a lot of really interesting, exciting stuff. And, it's kind of a continuation of something that I've always kind of dabbled in. And, I told him when the Daytona thing came up, I said, look, what do you guys think? Because obviously, yeah, I made a commitment to them, but they're like, look, by all means, do it wide open. It's kind of a good time for us because we're in between stuff, and we got pretty much everything to do for last year wrapped up and then going into this year. And, when this thing came up, it was like, yeah, let's do it. You know, let's have the fun, let's try out some races, and where life takes me, it will take me. You know, I mean, it's so funny. I spent my whole life trying to make things happen, and sometimes they work out, sometimes they don't. But what I've learned is you can't, you know, what is meant to be is meant to be, and that's kind of where I'm at in my life. So, you know, when I went to Daytona, you know, I kind of turned, you know, that off and racing on and had fun. I loved it, and it was great to get in the car. And then Monday morning, I turned the other one back on, and when Atlanta didn't pan out, and now I'm going to Vegas. So, couple of days of meetings in New York, and then doing the NBC TV show, and which I'm really pumped about. Get ready to go on air here in a few minutes, and that's always fun. I really enjoyed that as well with you, and everyone at NBC has been great, and it's been a really educational, fun process for me. And I love to learn. So I love working. I love doing new things. I love being challenged, you know, in or out of the race car, and that's what all of this is for me. And so it's been fun. But you know, when Wednesday comes, all that turns off and racing turns back on, and that's going to be my focus, priority, and that's all I'm thinking about Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that for this weekend, Brian. Obviously, we love having you on NASCAR America this week, having you on Monday and Tuesday, but of course, you're going out to Vegas to race the 14 car again. I know Vegas was special for you last year, and it's great that it's going to be special for you again this year. What are you looking forward to this weekend? I know low downforce for you for the first time this season. Just, give me this weekend what you're expecting in a nutshell.
Yeah, I think I'm really looking forward to just being in the car. Vegas is a special place for me, and not because of the strip, but because, some key moments in my life happened there. I mean, getting back in the race car after open heart surgery was without question something that myself or a lot of people thought would ever happen. It was a special moment. I mean, it's easy to look back and think, gosh, well, it didn't last, it didn't stick, so to speak. And I was back out of the car and I'm like, yeah, that's fine. But that didn't really matter. I mean, the fact that just getting back in the car and racing was one accomplishment. Going out there and racing well and having a decent finish was kind of another. And what happened after that was irrelevant. So for that reason, Vegas, holds a very special place for me and always will. I'm really excited to get back in the car there. I like the racetrack. Mike and the guys at Stuart Haas feel like we've got a great car going out there. It's very cool to see C-Mobile One back in the car. It means a lot to me that they wanted me back after spending some time with them down in Daytona. And, so we've got great partners and a great team. And I'm pumped, man. I'm looking forward to it.
So, the last one I've got for you, Brian, is obviously we don't know what's going to happen beyond Vegas. Where do you want to be, I suppose, after this weekend? Maybe you get another opportunity in the 14 car, but are you hoping that this might lead to other opportunities with other teams? Do you have any sense of that? You know, where do you think you'll be after this week?
Well, I have no idea, Ryan. I have no idea where I'll be. And you know, and honestly, there's kind of a beauty in that. Like I care, but I don't. And you know, and again, it's that non-attention. Like I if I have an opportunity to race the 14 again or another winning car, you know, I'm all over it. And if I don't, then that's fine. You know, that's kind of what has in store. I suspect you're going to see me back in the car again, you know, and we'll go from there. You know, I told Tony, I said, you don't want to run full time. I'm not sure if I do either. You know, maybe we get one other guy and we just split the season in thirds. How's that sound? And he said, I wish you had told me that before I sold the car. He said, that's a great idea. I wish we had thought about this about a year sooner. But I you know, we'll see where life takes me. My job right now, honestly, and I know a lot of guys, I think, say this. I used to say this all the time. Like, oh, you know, I'm only worried about today. I'm only focused on today. And most guys are kind of just saying that because they think it's what they're supposed to say and what they've heard and kind of what they think, but they don't really believe it in their balls. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that doesn't mean that I wouldn't be happy with the opportunity to be in a winning car and to go race for wins another time. It doesn't mean, you know, that I don't have things that I want or like or interest. You know, I'd love to be back. You know, I'd love to be back in the 14 for more races. And you know, I feel like that, you know, I hope that'll happen. I think it will happen. But, you know, if it doesn't happen, like, me being upset or pouting about it does not change the outcome at all.
Right, right. Well, no matter what happens, man, we wish you much luck this weekend, and glad to see you got another opportunity this year. And hope, regardless of anything else, I hope Vegas turns out well for you.
Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you, Nate, and great to be on the podcast, and look forward to doing it again sometime soon, hopefully.
Sounds good, BB. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.